You're listening to the John DePietro Show. Well, there it was, for all the world to see, a president who is not up to the job, should not be there. You know, it is, as some people have described it, it reminded them of the uncomfortable conversation of having to take the car keys away from an elderly parent. Let's play it. This is President Biden delivering his remarks.
About their look into my handling of classified documents. I was pleased to see he reached a firm conclusion that no charges should be brought against me in this case. This was an exhaustive investigation going back more than 40 years, even into the 1970s when I was still a new United States senator. The special counsel acknowledged I cooperated completely. I did not throw up any roadblocks. I sought no delays. In fact, I was so determined to give the special counsel what he needed, I went forward with a five-hour in-person interview over 2 days on October the 8th and 9th of last year, even though Israel had just been attacked by Hamas on the 7th, and I was very occupied. It was
Now, he starts off fine. That's, of course, the president. He starts off fine. Now, remember, though, this is all, he's just reading prepared remarks. So there's a big difference in the fact of that he starts off and he's just going through the motions on this thing. And then, of course, where this thing goes off into. And where it goes off into is far, far different. Because what, as everyone saw, last night, and I don't think everyone watched it, and that's why I wanted to play the full sound of it. But, okay, he's reading the teleprompter, but he can't handle any form of questions. Let's go back to President Biden last night.
Charges.
Again, him trying to go through the remarks.
This was an exhaustive investigation going back more than 40 years, even into the 1970s when I was still a new United States senator. The special counsel acknowledged I cooperated completely. I did not throw up any roadblocks. I sought no delays. In fact, I was so determined to give the special counsel what he needed, I went forward with a five-hour in-person interview over 2 days on October the 8th and 9th of last year, even though Israel had just been attacked by Hamas on the 7th, and I was very occupied. It was in the middle of handling an international crisis. I was especially pleased to see special counsel make clear the stark distinction and difference between this case and Mr. Trump's case. Special counsel wrote, and I quote, several material distinctions between Mr. Trump's case and Mr. Biden's are clear, continuing to quote, most notably, after giving multiple chances to return classified documents to avoid prosecution, Mr. Trump allegedly did the opposite. According to the indictment, he not only refused to return the documents for many months, he also obstructed justice by enlisting others to destroy evidence and then to lie about it. In contrast, he went on to say Mr. Biden turned in classified documents to the National Archives and the Department of Justice, consented to the search of multiple locations, including his home, sat for a voluntary interview, and in other ways cooperated with the investigation, end of quote. I've seen the headlines since the report was released about my willful retention of documents. These assertions are not only misleading, they're just plain wrong. On page 215, if you had a chance, I know it's a thick document. On page 215 of the report of the special counsel found the exact opposite. Here's what he wrote. There is, in fact, a shortage of evidence that I willfully retained classified materials related to Afghanistan. On page 12, special counsel also wrote, for another documents, the decision to decline criminal charges was straightforward. The evidence suggests that Mr. Biden did not willfully retain these documents. The evidence who said I did not willfully retain these documents. In addition, I know there's some attention paid to some language in the report about my recollection of events. There's even reference that I don't remember when my son died. How in the hell dare he raise that? Frankly, when I was asked the question, I thought to myself, it wasn't any of their damn business. Let me tell you something. Some of you have commented. I wear, since the day he died, every single day, the rosary he got from Our Lady of... Every Memorial Day, we hold a service remembering him, attending by friends and family and the people who loved him. I don't need anyone. I don't need anyone to remind me when he passed away or passed away. Simple truth is, I sat for a five-hour interview over 2 days of events going back 40 years. At the same time, I was managing an international crisis. Their task was to make a decision about whether to move forward with charges in this case. That was their decision to make. That's the counsel's decision to make. That's his job. And they decided not to move forward. For any extraneous commentary, they don't know what they're talking about. It has no place in this report. The bottom line is the matter is now closed. I'm going to continue what I've always focused on, my job of being President of the United States of America. Now, thank you, and I'll take some questions.
President Biden, something the special counsel said in his report is that one of the reasons you were not charged is because, in his description, you are a well-meaning elderly man with a poor memory.
I'm well-meaning, and I'm an elderly man, and I know what the hell I'm doing. I've been president, and I put this country back on its feet. I don't need his recommendation.
It's How bad is your memory, and can you continue as president?
My memory is so bad, I let you speak. My memory is fine. My memory, take a look at what I've done since I've become president. None of you thought I could pass any of the things I got passed. How'd that happen? You know, I guess I just forgot what was going on.
Mr. President.
Voters have concerns about your age. How are you going to assuage them? And do you fear that this report is only going to fuel further concerns about your age?
Only by some of you.
Mr. President, you're a criminal liability today. Do you take responsibility for at least being careless with classified material?
I take responsibility for not having seen exactly what my staff was doing. It goes in and points out things that appeared in my garage, things that came out of my home, things that were moved not by me, but my staff.
Mr. President, for months when you were asked about your age, you would respond with the words, "Watch me." Many American people have been watching, and they have expressed concerns about your age.
That is not the judgment of the press.
They express concerns about your mental acuity. They say that you are too old. Mr. President, in December, you told me that you believe there are many other Democrats who could defeat Donald Trump. So why does it have to be you now? What is your answer to that question?
Because I'm the most qualified person in this country to be President of the United States and finish the job I started. I did not share classified information. I did not share it.
With your ghostwriter?
With my ghostwriter, I did not. Guarantee you did not.
But the special counsel said it.
Well, no, he did not say that.
Okay.
He did not say that.
But, Mr. President,
let me answer your question. The fact of the matter is, what I didn't want repeated, I didn't want him to know, and I didn't read it to him, was I had written a long memorandum to President Obama why we should not be in Afghanistan. And I was of multiple pages. And so what I was referring to, I said classified, I should have said it was should be private because it was a contact between the president and the vice president as to what was going on. That's what he's referring to. It was not classified information in that document. That was not classified.
When you look back at this incident, is there anything you would do differently now? And do you think that a special prosecutor should have been appointed in the first place in both of these cases?
First of all, what I would have done is overseen the transfer of the material that was in my office, in my offices. I should have done that. If I go back, I didn't have the responsibility to that. That was my staff was supposed to do that, and they referenced that in the report. And my staff did not do it in the way that, for example, I didn't know how half the boxes got in my garage until I found out staff gathered them up, put them together, and took them to the garage in my home. And all the stuff that was in my home was in filing cabinets that were either locked or able to be locked. It was in my house. It wasn't out in, like, in Mar-a-Lago in a public place where, and none of it was high classified. Didn't have any of that red stuff on it. You know what I mean? Around the corners? None of that. And so I wish I had paid more attention to how the documents were being moved and where. I thought they were being moved to the archives. I thought all of those being moved. That's what I thought. Now, what was the last part of your question?
Whether a special counsel should have been appointed in this case and in the case of your rival president, former president.
I think a special counsel should have been appointed. And the reason I think a special counsel should have been appointed is because I did not want to be in a position that they looked at Trump and weren't going to look at me, just like they looked at the vice president. And the fact is they made a firm conclusion. I did not break the law, period. Thank you all very, very much.
And here's where he starts to leave. He stops. He starts to talk, and now he shuffles back to the podium.
I'm of the view, as you know, that the conduct of the response in Gaza, in the Gaza Strip, has been over the top. I think that, as you know, initially the president of Mexico, Sisi, did not want to open up the gate to allow humanitarian material to get in.
Should have kept going.
I talked to him. I convinced him to open the gate. I talked to Bibi to open the gate on the Israeli side. I've been pushing really hard, really hard, get humanitarian assistance into Gaza. There are a lot of innocent people who are starving, a lot of innocent people who are in trouble and dying. And it's got to stop, number one. Number two, I was also in a position that I'm the guy that made the case that we have to do much more to increase the amount of material going in, including fuel, including other items. I've been on the phone with the Qataris, I've been on the phone with the Egyptians, I've been on the phone with the Saudis to get as much aid as we possibly can into Gaza. There are innocent people, innocent women and children who are also in badly in need of help. And so that's what we're pushing. And I'm pushing very hard now to deal with this hostage ceasefire because, as a, you know, I've been working tirelessly in this deal. How can I say this without revealing it? To lead to a sustained pause in the fighting, in the actions taking place in the Gaza Strip. And because I think if we can get the delay for that, the initial delay, I think that we would be able to extend that so that we could increase the prospect that this fighting in Gaza changes. There's also negotiations. You may recall, in the very beginning, right before Hamas attacked, I was in contact with the Saudis and others to work out a deal where they would recognize Israel's right to exist, let them make them part of the Middle East and recognize them fully in return for certain things that the United States would commit to do. And the commitment that we were proposed to do related to two items I'm not going to go in detail, but one of them was to deal with the protection against their arch enemy to the northwest, or northeast, I should say. The second one, by providing ammunition and material for them to defend themselves. Coincidentally, that's the time frame when this broke out. I have no proof what I'm about to say, but it's not unreasonable to suspect that the Hamas understood what was about to take place and wanted to break it up before it happened.
Now he shuffles back off again. Folks, again, that was President Biden. And by the fact he went back is when he made the big gaffe on the leader. I mean, the whole thing was a disaster. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. AJ, drywall, plaster, home improvement, call them today for a free quote. You can also find them on Facebook, 401-323-9252. 323-9252, AJ, drywall, plasters, home improvement, frame to finish basements. What a difference it'll make in your basement. Acoustic ceilings. Look how beautiful your ceiling could be. New homes, additions. Also, commercial rehabs, painting, remodeling. Contact them today. It's a family-run business. AJ, drywall, plaster, home improvements. Call for a free quote. What a difference they'll make in your home, your ceilings, floors, basements. 401-323-9252. What a difference. Beautiful walls and ceilings. 401-323-9252. You can also find them on Facebook. It's AJ Drywall Plaster and Home Improvements for your home or business. You're listening to the John DePietro Show. Well, obviously, I mean, the story and what went down completely altering the race for president. And on top of that, I mean, if he just continues down the road, watch the poll numbers now. Let's go to some of the sound, starting with on CNN of all places, talking about what was the result of this special counsel.
Joe Biden, established by this report, Joe Biden retained sensitive classified documents after he left the vice presidency.
Marked classified? Or?
Yes, marked classified, highest level, top secret SCI. They related to our international affairs, to war plans, to foreign relations. He knew it. He's on tape after he's out of the vice presidency saying to his autobiographer, the classified documents are in the basement. He knew it.
But he just denied that. That's a key part of the report. It's the second sentence in the report, and he just denied sharing that with the ghostwriter. And I just looked at this closely. They had recorded conversations between Biden and this ghostwriter.
Exactly.
No, this is, listen, there's damaging and then there's damaging. This is absolutely beyond the pale as far as damaging. And him losing his temper, he didn't help in his way, his argument in any way.
He would respond with the words, "Watch me." Many American people have been watching, and they have expressed concerns about your age.
That is not the judgment of the press.
They expressed concerns about your mental acuity. They say that you are too old. Mr. President, in December, you told me that you believe there are many other Democrats who could defeat Donald Trump. So why does it have to be you now? What is your answer to that question?
Because I'm the most qualified person in this country to be president of the United States and finish the job I started.
You know, I believe right now the challenge is not to pile on, because it almost becomes too easy how, in fact, people, how you can pile on. A well-meaning elderly man who doesn't have a good memory.
Elderly man.
I mean, think about that.
And I'll take some questions.
President Biden, something the special counsel said in his report is that one of the reasons you were not charged is because, in his description, you are a well-meaning elderly man with a poor memory.
I'm well-meaning, and I'm an elderly man, and I know what the hell I'm doing. I've been president, and I put this country back on its feet. I don't need his recommendation.
It's totally out. How bad is your memory, and can you continue as president?
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Your memory has gotten worse, Mr. President?
My memory is fine. My memory, take a look at what I've done since I become president. None of you thought I could pass any of the things I got passed. How'd that happen? You know, I guess I just forgot what was going on.
I mean, this is, listen, it's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable. And then you just wonder, how long are they going to continue to trot him out to do these things? I mean, the fact of just on Mexico and everything else. I mean, it's, again, as I was saying, I find it hard to believe that anyone is, the cover of the New York Post, elderly man with a poor memory, bombshell probe, Biden too senile to charge. That's essentially what they said. And they can try to spin it any way they want. And they are trying to spin it. But 76% of Americans say President Biden does not have the mental and physical health to be the president of the United States for a second term. Period. And that number's only going to increase. Babylon Bee, man ruled too senile to stand trial, still fine to run the country. Does that make sense to anyone? Babylon Bee, Biden calls for the president to step down. Here's some comments. Watching the president's press conference in real time, responding to the special prosecutor's report alleging cognitive decline. This was the worst possible moment to confuse Egypt with Mexico while answering a question on Gaza. Some other comments. We've reached the point of insanity. Him continuing as the Democrat presumptive nominee. The language in the report says it all in his apparent lapses and failures. Diminished faulty memory. And the only reason he, you know, and it's already kind of been him talking about creating that gaffe and confusing world leaders. How is this not game over? Now, the question is, though, I mean, they're still maintaining that he's going to be the nominee. I just don't. The question would be, how do they get out of it? How do they get out of it? And I think a lot could go to what's going to happen with the Democrat convention. I don't believe that they are going to essentially just, you know, put a new nominee up. I still think they would have to go through the process. But what we saw last night, I mean, no one being honest would say that he is capable of doing, he'll be lucky to finish this term, let alone go out. I don't have to replay. I mean, we've heard it. It's uncomfortable to listen to. It's hard to believe he is the president of the United States, but I do not see a path where that's going to continue past this year. Folks, you're listening to The John DePietro Show. All your oil needs, make it Henry Oil. Call Henry Oil today, 401-521-0200. Reliable, affordable fuel oil delivery. Call Henry Oil today. Fuel oil, diesel, gasoline delivery. It's Henry Oil, residential, commercial fuel oil delivery since 1947. They also have budget plans, service contracts, lock and cap pricing. You can depend on Henry Oil. Call them today, 401-521-0200. Serving most of Rhode Island and southeastern Mass. We got a long way to go with winter. Make sure that tank is filled. Call Henry Oil today, 401-521-0200. Henry Oil, a local family-run business since 1947 that you can depend on. For all your oil needs, call Henry Oil today, 401-521-0200. Our guest is the columnist with the Boston Globe. It's Dan McGowan. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. Folks, joining us right now, he is a columnist with the Boston Globe. It is Dan McGowan. And Dan, I want to just start off. That was a remarkable overtime win by the PC Friars, a team that, I mean, you lose your best player dominant, and boy, they have two players on the team that are just completely rallying. That was an impressive win.
Yeah, and a desperate win, too. I mean, they kind of laid an egg over the weekend against Villanova, and, you know, you could easily see, when you have, like, a disheartening performance like that, given sort of everything they're facing, you could easily see the season kind of going in a tailspin. I mean, you know, you're going, even with a home game, Creighton was a, you know, top 20 team in the country. easily could have been a loss last night, and then suddenly you're, you know, you're two games under 500, and before you know it, you lose a couple more, and you know, this, you're suddenly down, you know, with the Georgetowns and the DePauls of the world, a little better, but you're in that range. But big win last night, and now you start to look at it, and you spin it the other way. You look at the schedule; next three games are all winnable games. And suddenly you could be, you know, 9-6 heading down the stretch, which would put you squarely in the NCAA tournament conversation. And you're right. I mean, I think they're just getting they're getting such spirited performances. I mean, you look at the minutes the starters are playing. I mean, obviously this overtime last night, but I think they had three guys go 40 minutes plus last night. And that Devin Carter, I don't know what he's going to be in the NBA, but he is a special college player.
He
makes big shots. He plays hard, rises to the occasion. So, you know, I think there's still something to be excited about with this PC team as we head into February. February schedule.
What a season for the rookie coach as well. I'm glad things are turning out. He seems to be the real deal. I'm very impressed by the hire. You're exactly right. Over the weekend, the way they bounce back at home like that, it's something to get excited about. Folks, in the Boston Globe, incredible extensive coverage of obviously this ongoing situation with the bridge. Dan McGowan, the latest now, environment and toxic. Union leaders are speaking out at Rhode Island DOT about Peter Alviti. I'm curious to hear some of your thoughts on that.
Well, it's stunning to me in that as you and I have talked about in recent weeks, you know, Peter Alviti is a through and through union guy. And I know, you know, not all unions are the same and things like that, but you never, very rarely do you hear people willing to go, quite frankly, on the record about, you know, about their frustrations with Peter Alviti. And I think, honestly, you know, part of it is, you can say it's his popularity. I think part of it is he is a guy who, you know, everybody knows has lots of, you know, lots of respect in the laborers' world, lots of respect kind of at the state house. And so, you know, it is a, I think it's a dangerous move. And dangerous, I mean, just like professionally to kind of cross Peter Alviti. But what you're seeing here is what happens, I think, almost every time you have a major, you know, a major scandal or challenge or issue, which is people are starting to feel a little more comfortable. You know, I think they're starting to maybe sniff a little blood and, you know, potentially seeing the writing on the wall that there could be a change in leadership here. I'll be honest, I'm still a little bit skeptical that there. I think Governor McKee seems to be signaling that he's going to stick with Peter Alviti. But, you know, you start to get the drip, drip, drip of now who's upset and who's, you know, who's frustrated with the culture in that place. And my guess is this won't be the last you hear about some of the concerns around Peter. We've heard a lot about, you know, how wonderful he is for a long time. And I think now you start to, you know, again, as people start to sniff a little blood, you start to hear the other side of things and some of the frustrations. You know, what I don't know, and I trust my colleague Brian Amaral is a very good reporter and who did a good job getting people again to go on the record to talk about this. Is what we just don't know, you know, what is there, are there contractual issues that, you know, has people griping? You know, we always see that on the kind of the teachers union side. And so, you know, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. But again, I don't think this will be the last time you hear about kind of a, you know, a subpar work environment there at the Department of Transportation.
Dan McGowan, what did you make of the fact that first DOT charged news organizations for the money, and then Governor McKee seemingly stepped in and then started refunding the money?
Well, I thought it was a smart move, I suppose, of the governor to realize that it's not a good move to, you know, to charge different prices for, you know, for two different media outlets for generally the same information. I mean, this is one of those things where I don't get as caught up and hung up on the cost of public records requests. I understand, you know, we're asking for people's emails and text messages. It's not the easiest thing to do. This is one of those things, though, where rather than kind of be very secretive and try to negotiate these one-offs with each news outlet, I don't understand why you don't call the Globe, the Journal, Channel 12, 10, and 6, and whoever else, and say, hey, you know, you guys are all asking for roughly the same thing. If you all put in $50, then it'll, you know, it'll solve all the problems, and you're not going to have anyone complaining about, you know, who paid what, and that sort of thing. It was just an unnecessary distraction for them, and they really made a big mistake with it, because, you know, the truth is, those initial batch of emails, it's not like there was some big smoking gun. I think the charging the media story ended up actually, it forced more conversation about these emails than there probably would have been if they had just been, you know, somewhat more transparent and just more straightforward with the cost. But I should say, you know, I criticize the governor a lot. Good on the governor for realizing it was a mistake. Just that should never have happened in the first place.
What was your reaction when Governor McKee basically, in a radio interview, said he wasn't aware a press conference was happening on December 11th until... in fact, that Director Alviti announced that the bridge was being closed?
My jaw dropped, John. The funny thing is, I think a lot of you, I'm curious, maybe you could offer some insight having done radio for your career. You know, I'm always interested in the non-radio media, so TV, print, that doesn't pay attention to what, you know, the governor or the mayor or the DOT director says on some of these interviews, because it's incredibly revealing. And so many, so many of my colleagues in the non-radio media, pretend or actively ignore what gets said. But it's stunning to me that the governor of Rhode Island says, yeah, I wasn't even aware that they were going to have this press conference. I knew that we were going to communicate it. Well, yeah, you were closing the Washington Bridge in rush hour. I hope you were aware that there was going to be some communication. I don't understand how you didn't demand to have a press conference. I mean, that closure, and by the way, everybody took it live, as you know, all the TV stations. That's the kind of thing where the governor of Rhode Island could make one phone call to each of the TV stations to say, hey, you got it. You guys have to preempt your news. You have to do this. It's an emergency situation. And, you know, I'll be there and I'll explain everything. And every one of them would have, of course, including radio too, would have, of course, broken in from their newscast and covered it. It's just stunning to me how... the word, I think I used this last week with you too, John, is just lackadaisical at times. I think the governor can be, he's very flippant about, you know, yeah, sure, we didn't, you know, I didn't know about this one. And then there wasn't communication at all over the weekend about this. You know, and of course the governor didn't even know until Monday, you know, he says Monday afternoon. I do not think, honestly, and the governor's, including from me and definitely from you, the governor's gotten plenty of criticism. I don't think he's gotten enough criticism for not being in the loop about, you know, about the most important major kind of crisis the state has seen in some time.
Dan McGowan, and again, folks, we're speaking with Dan McGowan of the Boston, columnist of the Boston Globe. You go back to his predecessor, Governor Gina Raimondo appeared on television with Dr. Nicole Alexander Scott to announce that it was basically the beginning of COVID.
Yeah.
And what's more remarkable is not only was he unaware that his director of DOT was going to go on television, I still can't wrap my head around the fact that at 5:20 he left the State House and went to the Hope High School basketball practice.
And he acts, you know, well, of course I did, because of my education, you know, plan. I'm sorry, but basketball practice is going to take, you're going to have to skip it when you have the Washington Bridge closing down. This is not, you know, a tiny little bridge in a small place in Rhode Island. This is, you know, 100,000 people travel over this thing every day. The governor of Rhode Island needs to be there. And, you know, what's interesting about this, John, is you know, I was extremely critical of the governor, you know, immediately after he did that. I think you and I talked later in the week, and things had been, it seemed like they were getting better. It was almost like, oh, you know, they told us it'll be a couple of weeks to get the, you know, the emergency lanes open. Boom, they were open by Friday. You know, I'll bet you they said it'll be 3 months to, you know, fix the bridge. I'll bet you it'll be done by, you know, January 1st or something like that. And they'll be able to, you know, tout a big victory. The thing is, they acted, and he's acting like because they kind of got those emergency lanes open and had a good, you know, let's say a bad rollout, you know, I would say letter grade F on the Monday, but that they got better, that they somehow have done a really good job here. I mean, we're now talking about potentially, you know, a year or two minimum to fix the bridge if it is in fact needing kind of a full repair. This has been not just disastrous communication, but it's been incredibly poor planning. It's been, you know, setting people's hopes up and then now really dashing them, I think, from a leadership perspective. I just can't fathom the idea that the governor has bungled this as much as he has.
And perhaps doesn't still understand the significance. Dave McGowan, as we're speaking, they've had another horrendous morning there where traffic is at a gridlock, and he seems more excited about this film that's already underway, this Ella McCray, or about a lieutenant governor that becomes governor. I mean, I kind of understand, okay, the excitement of it, but this is a problem that's not going away. I want to... Our guest is the columnist with the Boston Globe. It's Dan McGowan. Just quickly ask you about your thoughts on the Providence schools. The education commissioner certainly seems intent. She's got a plan. I'm just curious your thoughts that already, you know, I think we're starting to see some of the stunts that are going to be pulled anytime she's trying to revamp, maybe merge some schools. You don't need all those schools. They have less students than they've had. What's going to happen, or what's your read right now on the Providence school situation?
Yeah, look, anytime they close schools, and, you know, I've covered, God, going back to the Tavares administration, I've probably covered 10, I don't know, 15 school closures in my time. All, by the way, always underperforming, and severely so, in most cases. You know, often lower enrollment, things like that. And there's always, it's always a crisis, right? It's always, we're going to protest and kids are going to walk out and we're going to rally the teachers and things like that. You know, I think the challenge in this case, in the context here, is that Providence is going to close one of its smaller high schools, 360 High School, is what we're not getting from the state is sort of the, kind of a clear decision-making that you would expect around this. Now, you would always get, you're always going to get criticism for school closures. There's no way around it. It's every community, everywhere. But, you know, this is one of those things that seemingly a decision was made sort of relatively quietly. The 360 school is not a high-performing school. None of them are, except for classical. And even classical has some, obviously, challenges, as we've covered and talked about. But it is one of the schools that seemingly has a somewhat strong culture. The principal there is considered among the more highly kind of competent principals. The thing I would say about this, though, is that principal can find a new job. And if that principal's good enough, they can go to, you know, if they're really good, let's stick them in Mount Pleasant. Let's stick them in Hope. You know, these big schools where you have, you know, just incredibly, stunningly low academic performance. So, look, I don't blame the district and the commissioner for trying to make changes. I think that they have really struggled. You know, you go back to you and I when you know, we first started doing this segment years ago, you and I would regularly, I think, praise the education commissioner for how sort of open and honest and how she was taking kind of her show on the road and really building the case for the state takeover. what they have retreated to, especially since Governor McKee took office, is really this education committee, Infante Green, kind of shows the same traits in some ways as Governor McKee. They're always convinced, you know, who's leaking, who's out to get me. It's a lot of that kind of thing. And so I think sometimes they kind of create their own problem because, you know, they keep things really tight-lipped until they have to announce it. Then they get a bunch of uproar because they say, well, the teachers or the community says, well, you're being very secretive. And so this is another kind of situation where I think it's they've kind of screwed up the communication, even though probably in the long run, it's true that, you know, we've proven in Providence that big high schools don't seem to work, but little high schools don't seem to work. So, you know, trying to make another change is a reasonable decision. And again, this was a school that was, you know, by no means is performing exceptionally well.
I think, Dan McGowan, you're going to see a teacher strike in Rhode Island. Newton showed after 2 weeks they got what they wanted, and right now the McKee administration, the last thing they need with the bridge is a teacher strike. They'll fold.
I don't know if we go as far as a strike, but I'm not going to dismiss that. I think it is entirely, you know, something that could be in the cards. But you want to talk about leverage because of the fact that you don't want a Washington, you know, you've got the Washington Bridge going on. Remember, the Providence Teachers Union contract is a year contract. It ends August 31st. So you get it on the head. The Providence teachers are going to be, you know, really sniffing blood. And it reminds me a little bit of that, you know, heading into an election year, all those teachers shouting down Merrill Lawrence at his State of the City address, you know, embarrassing him in front of his mom and really, really, you know, again, almost like being so loud you couldn't hear the address. I think you could see another scenario where that type of thing happens, but this time with the governor.
Folks, you hear me mention roadmap. There's links to all the stories in the Globe, whether it be the Red Sox and Netflix or everything going on in our state, whether it be also soccer. And then, as I mentioned, incredible story on what's going on at that group home, St. Mary's, and also this story about the situation at DOT. Dan McGowan, right now, if you'd be so kind to just extend that offer to anyone who's listening.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for letting me do it. For everybody out there, it's very simple. Send me a blank email, rinews@globe.com, rinews@globe.com. I will sign you up. You'll start getting it first thing tomorrow morning.
Folks, he's Dan McGowan of the Boston Globe. Dan, great job, and we'll talk to you again.
Have a good weekend. Thanks.
You're listening to the John DePietro Show. What a moment in American history. Who at the White House said we need to send him out right away tonight? Now, I'm not sure it would have been better in the morning, but at least he could have been better prepared, and he could have been rested instead of being the angry guy that we saw last night, right, telling you to get off his lawn. But let's go to some of the highlights.
Of the response in Gaza, in the Gaza Strip, has been over the top. I think that, as you know, initially the president of Mexico, Sisi, did not want to open up the gate to allow humanitarian material to get in. I talked to him. I convinced him to open the gate. I talked to Bibi to open the gate on the Israeli.
I mean, I'm sure people, you've heard this, but I mean that, of all times, to refer to the Egyptian president as the president of Mexico, refers to the Egyptian president as the president of Mexico, and then him yelling, right, as far as he did have classified information and classified documents, and then him trying to get the laugh with Peter at Fox and the shuffling. It really is remarkable that his sister and Jill Biden continue to trot him out there. I mean, at this point, I mean, this is actually cruel. Come on. He would be perfectly fine. As a retired man who had a successful political career, for crying out loud, he was vice president for 8 years, almost president for 4 years. But making him go through this right now, it's just... All right, let's go to Jill Biden. She sees him every day.
Is there a part of you that is worried about his age and health? Can he do it?
He can do it. And I see Joe every day. I see him out, you know, traveling around this country. I see his vigor. I see his energy. I see his passion.
There's the person that wants him to remain as president. Jill Biden, right there. I mean, that is just, this is, and then him even confusing color states.
State or green state. When I said, when we pushed all these programs, I said, I'm going to be a president for everybody, whether you live in a red state or a green state. When I said, when we pushed all these programs, I said, I'm going to be a president for everybody, whether you live in a red state or a green state.
Listen, I take no joy that the president of our country has become a laughingstock. And, I mean, how about if I were smart, I'd leave now.
If I were smart, I should leave now. Please, thank you.
That would be a good idea to leave. Listen, and this is the person, keep in mind, Governor McKee says, the best president Rhode Island has ever seen. So, but him yelling at the reporters, I just did not, that did not play. Him trying to do the humor with Peter Ducey of Fox. If I had any memory, I wouldn't have, if I had a good memory, I wouldn't have taken or listened to you or taken your question. My memory is so bad I let you speak.
My memory is so bad I let you speak.
That's supposed to be a joke.
Your memory has gotten worse, Mr. President.
My memory is not gotten. My memory is fine. My memory, take a look at what I've done since I've become president. None of you thought I could pass any of the things I got passed.
See, that's the big line. Watch me. They just tell him to say that.
I just forgot what was going on.
This is ridiculous.
How bad is your memory, and can you continue as president?
My memory is so bad, I let you speak. That's
your memory has gotten worse.
You hear the nervous laughter, and that's exactly what it is, which is nervous laughter. They're not getting out of this one. I mean, they're just not. This, what we saw, I don't even need to pile on. This is not a matter of whether you agree with his policies or you disagree. This is about he is not physically up to the job. And the Democrat Party, they are kidding themselves and fooling themselves if they think that anyone right now is, in fact, up to physically, mentally performing the job. This is not a matter about policy. This is not a matter even of showing leadership. No one is even falling into that. This is a matter of there's no reasonable individual. And I was watching on CNN. They were trying to run cover for him. And it is only the Trump haters and the Biden real strong defenders are standing by him at this point. I'm looking at now John Harwood, journalist, public speaker. He used to be with the Wall Street Journal. He put this out. Biden's press conference showed the same thing his performance as office has shown for 3 years. He can do the job. Mexico for Egypt meant nothing. But the GOP political apparatus, bad faith enterprise, mainstream press been knocked silly by financial political pressures. I don't believe that. It does matter. It does matter. So anyone that would, at this point, when you watch him, this is one of those things, to me, that he can't handle. He can't spin his way out. He's not going to get better. He's not going to get younger. He's getting older. There's nothing wrong with that. It's part of life. But he's going to be 82 in November. And anyone that thinks he's mentally and physically up to the job for the next 4 years, you're kidding yourselves, because that number that is so high of people that don't feel he's up to it, it's only going to rise. So, wow, what a moment. Folks, you're listening to The John DePietro Show. Propane Plus. Call them today. Heating and cooling in Rhode Island, 401-885-4209. In Massachusetts, 508-252-3359 for Propane Plus. Three generations you can always depend on Propane Plus for all your heating and cooling. Call them today, 401-885-4209. Three generations, they're available 24/7 for service and delivery, and they're going to serve you for a very long time. They have a great user-friendly website. You just log on at propaneplus.com, and then you type in your zip code, residential, commercial, Propane Plus, heating and cooling, always there for you. Give them a call today. In Rhode Island, 401-885-4209. In Massachusetts, 508-252-3359. The Johnson family, three generations, heating and cooling. You can always depend on Propane Plus. It's My Health, 1099 Mendon Road in Cumberland, diagonally across from Davenport Restaurant. Stop in and see Marie, that historic white church. Shop local, inside, all quality products, vitamins, herbal remedies, trusted companies. They understand quality, integrity. It's My Health. It's all about your health. Local products, ICE, honey, maple syrup, beef fresh gum. You know, they carry over 250 bulk herbs, teas, and spices that can be purchased by the ounce, plus box herbs and teas, hemp and CBD products, and much more natural skincare products. Stop in and see Marie at It's My Health, 1099 Mendon Road in Cumberland. It's all about health for you, for your family. There's vitamins for children, all different types of teas, all different types of spices. Boy, what a difference it'll make. Shop local. Stop in and see the Queen of Health. It's Marie at It's My Health, 1099 Mendon Road in Cumberland, diagonally across from Davenport Restaurant, right in that historic white church. It's all about health. It's all about your health at It's My Health. A great meal, a great time is waiting for you at the Cohasset Inn. Rhode Island tradition since 1977, 226 Cohasset Avenue, West Warwick. They have a large dining room, perfect, maybe a group, maybe a collation, lunch. The Cohasset Inn, getting a big group together, or maybe just you alone, or a date. 226 Cohasset Avenue, West Warwick, great staff, terrific food. They're always working on the menu, and they also have a nice lounge as well. You have the market at Cohasset right there. They're open 7 days a week. I'll see you for a great meal. Make it the Cohasset Inn. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. Folks, I always tout our website just because it has exclusive stories and video. It has links to on-the-scene live stream. Remember, there's no vowel I. It's DePietro.com. DePietro.com. You can also reach me that way if you'd like to get in touch with me. DePietro.com. Log on, and then links to Facebook and YouTube, everything we have, it's all waiting for you right there at the website.